Hello, we are back, Bootstrapped Web. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Hello, Brian. You know how it's going.
Oh, another one of those days. But at least we got back on the mic after a couple of weeks off. We've had some traveling probably for both of us, and I'm getting back on a plane tomorrow, going on a week long vacation with the wife. And,
nice. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, Brian and I we sometimes have these conversations before we start recording. And sometimes those conversations get into places where we're like, you know, we know each other for a long time and we can be honest with each other. So there's some venting that happens. And sometimes those conversations get heated enough to the point where it's like, you know what, we can't even record right now.
There have been more than a few of those.
Yes,
when you see those gaps in the in the podcast feed, it's not that we didn't have the call. We did. We just decided not to record.
We had a private therapy session as opposed to a public podcast recording. That's really it. So today's one of those days, and I'm there, and Brian was very helpfully and thoughtfully coaching me through.
I don't know about that.
But you know, software and entrepreneurship can get you. They can get you there, man. I have been stretched for about 2 weeks. I was in Miami last week. So beautiful, sunny Miami, sitting by the pool, and in my head is just a roiling, you know, river of stress and thinking and all that. And I think I'm a bit tired. And I think that's why I'm kind of wearing my emotions on my sleeve. I said something the wrong way in our Slack this morning. I made a comment that was not helpful. And then I had, you know, someone ping me and say, look, man, I feel your frustration, but these comments are not helpful in public, especially coming from you. So I'm just kind of like,
It's extremely stressful doing what we do. And at the same time, we all choose to do what we do. We kind of feel like we don't have a choice. At least I feel that way. Like, I'm not going to go get a job. I almost want this stress, you know, for some crazy reason. We signed up for it. And you know, I've been having a lot of those days recently too. You know, we're in completely different situations, but with Process Kit, we'll get more into it today, but like one day is great and then the next day sucks. And one day is great and the next day sucks. And it's so far from being a real business. It's showing promise, a lot of good things happening. But like every day I'm like, I'm not doing enough, or there's too many things that I need to do that I'm behind on. And I just went to 2 week-long trips, Big Snow Tiny Comps, 2 of them. And now I'm about to get on a plane for a vacation, which I'm super excited about. But there's definitely going to be part of me that's like, there's so much that needs to be done. You know?
Yeah, I don't even know what to do anymore. It has a bit of a life of its own. And if you don't consciously keep an eye out for what's happening inside the business, it just kind of floats. Just, oh, that's what we do, and that's what we're doing next, and here's what's next. And so sometimes it feels like that. And then if I look back, though, it feels like, oh, my God, there's so much going on at the same time that we are – there's a lot of activity. Just don't know if it's the right activity or what will take us off of our current trajectory and change the degree, right, change the angle of growth. It's like you kind of get used to, okay, here's what we're doing, and this is the results that it brings. But you know what things can we do that would change that angle and make it easier? I think that's, you know, we've grown a lot over the past 3 years. No, you know, no bullshit on that front. I can acknowledge that and be happy about that. But the amount of frustration and pain that have gone along with it feels abnormal. It feels like, you know, like I somehow made it harder on ourselves. Because I have friends in Portland. We go to these microconf lunches and we talk. And I don't know if I'm being dramatic or what, but it doesn't feel like people are experiencing the same level of pain. And look, a lot of it has to do with our choice to build on top of a platform and to do something on top of that platform that is not within the normal confines of an app on that platform. And that has brought with it both a lot of that growth and opportunity, but also a lot of that pain. So I guess it makes sense in that way, but a lot of it feels self-inflicted. You know, and I think that's like this morning I lost my patience in Slack and kind of lashed out, you know, unproductively, because it's we have these things that we do at the upsells. That's what people sign up for, to do post-purchase upsells. And people love that part of it. But in order to accomplish the post-purchase upsells, you have to do the payment processing on the checkout page, so you have the payment token to then do the upsells with. When you own the checkout page, you have to help the merchant do analytics and tracking, like how much traffic did I get, who bought, what percentage, what's the conversion rate, all that stuff. That's analytics. And then tracking, like, okay, report this back to Facebook, report this back to Google, report this to Tag Manager, to Facebook, to Twitter, to all whatever tracking you're using to keep track of your affiliates and your ads. It's a deal breaker. You can't not have that. But these things are things that people don't even think about when they think about our product. And it's those things that hurt us the most.
Yeah, it's like they're already sold on the value proposition up front to become a customer. Like, we want to do post-purchase upsells. This is the best way to do it. Then, yes. Then after they're a customer, they're like, oh, and we definitely need to track it. So how do we do that?
Right. And the number one source of cancellations is those things, tracking analytics, which feels – I mean, you can see how that can drive you out of your mind. Everyone's signing up for X. And this basic thing that
and they probably are driving real results.
Yes, but it's
like they can't prove it on a report.
Right, right. And you kind of have to ask them to overlook the tracking and analytics difficulties because the ROI is overwhelming. And some companies will do that, and some companies won't. And some companies have straightforward enough setups that it's not an issue at all. But some customers get into this situation where it just doesn't work for them, and then they leave even though they're getting great ROI, and that can drive you nuts. You're like we're too – it feels like we're too – not even features. We're too like pain points away from product market fit. Like with those figured out, basically no one would leave, because the second you start using the product, you start making more money.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got like four quick bullet points here.
Cool. I have three.
I've got a salesperson on Audience Ops. I think I mentioned that. Now she's in full force and got some good reporting on that. And then my developer woes from the last few months, I feel like have finally been solved. I found a really great Indian developer. They're an agency, but I'm working with like one person directly there. That's been working out fantastic. I'm super, super psyched about that. I have an interesting way that I'm thinking about my development cycle, where like I push a new feature forward and then they kind of fall behind and clean up the mess that I made, basically.
Okay. That's interesting. Then, I have thoughts on that.
And then positioning and research. This is a big part of what I talked about at the two Big Snow Tiny Comps. And I did like a deep dive into some user and customer research on Process Kit, and I came away with some hard conclusions, and then I used those to ship some tweaks to the way that we're messaging and who it's for and all that. And then kind of the next thing that I'm going to really dive into once I'm back from my trip is onboarding. And I've got some ideas on how I want to be more proactive about getting people onboarded and through the different hoops that they need to become a paying customer. So I don't know if we'll be able to cover all that today, but yeah, that's what I got.
Cool. Yeah, I'm interested in what you described as like you building stuff and then someone cleaning up behind you, because we do something similar. So my points are, so I went to Slovenia and I saw the team, and then I grabbed Rock, our CTO, and we went to Copenhagen. You know, I think I was talking about it before we left about how it was like the goal was to have a good time. Like we it's almost like we needed to remember that through all the frustration and all that stuff that we got to celebrate and have a good time along the way. So I could talk about that. I kind of had this, I don't know, realization or just thought over the past few weeks about how distracting personal finances are to someone who's like trying to focus on building a big business.
How distracting personal everything is. Like anything with my house and like, oh, I don't want to deal with it.
Yes. But a lot of it feels like it comes down to finances, because a lot of it can just be solved financially. Like a house, I had a leak. I don't know. I just bought this new house. All of a sudden I have a leak. Great. So things like that. And so it felt, I had a conversation with my therapist about this, and I think she looked at me like I had five heads, where it was like, you know,
so you're like a normal person? Oh, okay.
Well, not really. It's actually the opposite, because I don't think I think like a normal person, because in my head, I'm like, I'm trying to make like $20 million. And it feels like the fact that like 100 or 200K would just quiet so much of my personal life that it feels like silly that I can't just like do that real quick while going for 20 million.
Just a real quick rant on the personal stuff that comes up. Okay. We had a leak in our kitchen too. We recently had to replace our water heater. Like stuff like that, when it comes up, it costs more for bootstrapped entrepreneurs to deal with it than the normal person.
How, I mean, financially it costs the same, right? But
no, yeah, financially it costs the same, but time, right? and energy, and like every single day, every hour of every day is so valuable to push this thing forward. If I have to sit on hold with some company in the middle of a Tuesday, that stuff drives me up the wall. Like I do not want to be doing that, you know? Thankfully, my wife typically, you know, handles most of that stuff, and she's a really good support that way. But like, but still, there's plenty of things that, you know, I have to get pulled into where it's just like, I don't want to even think about this right now, you know, and it's just all the time.
Yes. Everything that takes you off course. And sometimes I try to enjoy it. I'm like, no, I got to run an errand. I'm going to enjoy this errand. Hey, I'm going to put on a podcast on my way to this errand and kind of enjoy it as a break. But sometimes it'll drive you nuts. It makes me think of my dad growing up. I never used to understand. He would go to the doctor's office, and then the doctors, they make you wait. And he was like, oh, hell no. You do not make me wait.
Yeah.
You know, because
oh, I'm like that too. Was like,
yes, like you're taking.
You booked me at 4 o'clock. Why are you not seeing me at 4 o'clock?
It's 4:30. Yeah. And it's like, listen, you know, try not to curse too much. But like, this 2 hours is costing me $1,000 right now. Like, why do you think you can just do that to me? And he used to come home, and I was like, dude, relax. Everyone else is reading their magazine. They're off work. They're like, whatever. I'm in no rush.
Yeah. They're like, I get to be off work for a day. We're like, yes. We have to be off work for a day.
Yes. Yes. So I think that's what you mean by costs more.
Yeah. Yep.
I took some of that frustration. I tried to be productive with it. And I went and looked around. These very interesting solutions these days. Part of my issue is that I've raised money, right? So what that comes with is like there's a valuation attached to the business, and it's theoretical, but it's not out of thin air. And so it feels very strange to be stressed financially, but be sitting on like millions and millions of dollars of stock. And you're like, dude, how do we work this out? There's got to be something here, right? So there are actually starting to become solutions around this stuff. Like there's personal solutions. Well, let me just finish my thought. There's a service out there. I think it's called SecFi, and they will buy your personal stock, and then they'll get paid when you sell the company or go public. But the problem is it's really only for late stage, right? So if you're an Uber employee and you're sitting on $3 million worth of stock before it goes public.
They won't do this with like a founder of a private company.
Exactly right, which is understandable because it's the likelihood of being paid back is obviously a lot higher if it's late stage. That was one interesting thing. But still, these things are starting to come up more. There's actually a very interesting company I saw that looks at the equity of your house and will give you money based on that. And then they get paid back when you sell the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is cool. Yeah, cool.
There's
stuff.
A lot of little things. A lot of our friends, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, like a lot of people are interested in like personal finance and, you know, in the stock market and investments and all this different stuff. That's like not to do with your actual business, but like other investments.
Are you interested in that?
I am not. I am definitely not. What frustrates me sometimes about it is that like I don't want to do anything stupid, but I don't want to spend any time on it. You know, like
yeah, I'm only interested in it so far as I could not think about it.
Yeah. So what I did about a year and a half ago, was I moved all my investments and everything into Betterment. I know that I'm paying a bunch of fees for that and stuff, but like to me, at least their marketing and their messaging, their positioning really spoke to me. Like it's automated. Just let Betterment's computers do their thing, and it will automatically do the smart thing with your investments. And I've got a number of different things in there, like retirement, some other investments and stuff. And like, and it seemed like a very simple interface that I could see like what's going on. Whereas the other places that I used to have money in, it seemed like the interface was tailored to people who want to log in every single day and tweak their stocks and everything. And I do not want to do that at all.
Yeah. I don't care about the features of where the stop limits are and all that. No.
Yeah. Like I just want it to, I want automated investments and I want it to just go and that's it. That I feel like has helped, but I probably still don't do enough to like optimize the return and the trajectory and everything, but you know.
Yes, I don't think any of us do. That's it. The other part I wanted to ask you about, I'm trying to think through how I can test sales. So I can ask you about that on the heels of hearing more about what you have going on in sales.
All right, should I dive in?
Yeah, go for it.
So I mentioned in audience ops, one of my goals for this year was to finally remove myself from the sales role. One of the longtime managers in audience ops, she had expressed interest in expanding her role somehow in audience ops. And she's been like kind of a rock star, awesome person for us for a couple of years now. And so this was the one role remaining that I think she is a good fit. She has the right personality. She already talks to clients all the time through her management. So it just made sense. And I spent last month doing a little bit of training. She would listen to my recordings of my sales calls, and we had some Q&A calls. And then this month, February, she dove right in. And so now all new leads that come through Audience Ops go to her. And so she's now 2 full weeks into it. And we had 2 new clients sign up that she spoke to that I did not speak to. And I just feel good that she got those early wins. Because Audience Ops has been for years like frustratingly streaky. I'll go a week where I get 3 or 4 new signups and a week where there's nothing and another week where there's a couple of cancellations. And it's like, I didn't know what kind of month it was gonna just randomly happen to be during her first month. So I didn't want her to get into the mindset of like, how many weeks are gonna go by before I get one? And so she got 2 right off the bat, which is really good. And it's just, I mean, it's like a magical feeling to see like 4-figure payments come in from customers who I'd never spoke to.
That's big time. You've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah. And I've experimented with it in the past, but now I feel like at least it's definitely off to a good start. And, you know, I listen to her recordings. That is tough, man.
Oh my God, it's impossible.
That is really, really tough.
You know? I stopped doing that. I just ask people about how they are. And every once in a while I'll ask, you know, the customers about how their experience has been.
Yeah. I mean, I feel it's so early now that like, I don't plan to do it forever. Certainly not. And I don't like spending the time on this, but like, I feel like I have to.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Cause we're still very much in like training, even though she's doing them now. So the hard thing that I'm finding is that, cause part of it is like, I'm trying to become a better coach for sales. You know, it's one thing for me to do the sales calls. It's another thing to try to impart like my years of knowledge of selling this product. You know, the one challenge or the one thing that I'm trying to pass along to her is that she's been a manager, so she talks a lot about our process and we do this and then that and then this, and we'll talk about the logistics and everything, and I'm trying to tell her that like, look, on the sales call you don't need to get into the weeds. It's really just about covering the benefits and speaking to their questions and objections. And maybe this is like a tip that anybody can use somehow. Like, we have these go-to answers, that questions that always come up in every single sales call, right? And it's probably like 10 to 15 of these different pieces of the audience app service that we speak to. And I've spoken to hundreds of times. We have these like canned responses, scripted kind of. Her tendency is to just sort of like hit them all, whether they've asked about them or not. You know, so you ask about one and she'll answer that, plus 3 more points that they didn't necessarily ask about. So she'll just like give them all this information. The tip that I'm trying to give to her, maybe to our audience too, is like, don't give those answers until they have asked for them. And the point is, you want to keep those answers in your back pocket so that you can deliver them to the lead when they're ready to receive them and when the answer will have the most impact. If they ask about, well, how does audience ops deal with with writing for my special audience and my industry? Well, we have a really good answer for that, but it makes the most impact if we're answering that question and not answering like some other question, you know, because then the answer is used to actually overcome the objection that they just asked about. It's like that kind of finesse that I'm trying to pass along.
Yeah, you know? I think that's teachable though, like not being confident and coming across that way. Like that's kind of tougher to fix and tougher to teach. What you're talking about, that's fixable. I had an experience, well, it was a long time ago. I just remember it because it was in the co-working space called Galvanize in Denver. So it was a really long time ago. And I was doing demos for the Cartalk Recovery product. And someone asked me if I could like critique their demo. And so I listened in on them doing a demo of their product. That's what, I think it was she, that's what she did. She listed out everything and talked for 45 minutes straight about all the things that she could do. And it's really like, okay, you might have 20 good answers, but if four things are relevant, then that's really the only thing you should be talking about. It's almost like just matching and pulling them off the shelf as needed, as opposed to throw them all.
Like generally, my approach is really just for me to ask questions the whole time and get them talking and let them like describe the pain. And then I'm like, yep, I know. I hear that all the time and we solve it. So,
yep. You know. Cool. That's good. So it does sound like listening in will make sense. And then hopefully she'll kind of be off and running.
Yeah.
Nice, cool. Man. That's very exciting. Yeah. That could really kind of fundamentally change your ability to focus.
Totally. I mean, I have a ton of calls now and they're all for Process Kit, and it's nice not having the audience ops sales calls in between them.
Yeah. That switch.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. All right. So let's hold off on Copenhagen for a sec. Let me ask you, I have a thought in my head about sales. Maybe you can kind of help me come up with it. We're doing a lot more on marketing. We're doing event sponsorships. We just did our first one. We got a new website going. We have more content, all these different types of sponsorships like podcast, newsletter. And then we're also starting to outsource our ads. So instead of one person in-house kind of doing that full time, it's they'll be responsible for working with the agency. So we're about to ramp a lot of things up. But we still don't have a salesperson. Right. And we have one of our success people who is phenomenal, and she's going to go out and do a lot of those events. But we don't have a salesperson, and I hesitate to go all in and hire full time. So I'm trying to think of how do I look at sales as a campaign? Right. So if someone comes to me and says, it's $3,000 a month to sponsor this newsletter and you do it for 3 months, so it's a $9,000 campaign that lasts 3 months, and okay, we'll see what kind of ROI. That's like very confined. It doesn't add to fixed costs, doesn't add another person that if it, you know, you adding a full-time person, it's not just like, oh, it didn't work out, so let me fire you 90 days later. Like that's not cool. So all these factors, like how can I do a sales campaign? Freelancer, agency, service.
You mean just to like test whether you need to, whether you're going to do a big push on like outbound sales?
Yeah. How do I take a defined amount of money, $10,000, and put it on a sales bet so that we have direct outreach from a salesperson, but I haven't committed to the bet all the way to hiring a full-time person? Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think that
I know, you know what's out there, right? Like you could hire a freelancer and you just don't know if they're going to be good. You could hire someone who really wants to do sales and this is like a test run.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, definitely some sort of like trial period and just be extremely upfront with them. Like, look, 3 months, like this really is just a test. And if it works, then maybe we'll continue into a full-time role. But if not, then it's really just a 3-month contract, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to lump it in instead of dismissing it as like full time or nothing.
I do think that there's a separation between the sales calls and the prospecting. A lot of people decouple those into literally different people doing them.
You're right on that, and we have the sales calls,
because you could test those individually, and I mean you already do sales calls, so that's a continuous optimization.
Yes, and that's going really well. That's dialed in. But it's the prospecting.
It's the prospecting. Yes. So then you can test like lumpy mail versus like email outreach versus cold calling. Like, I don't know. And right, just to see response rates on those. And then.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if I should do that, but that's usually the wrong tendency.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to figure something out.
Yep. That's something I would like to later in the year, after I figure a bunch of other stuff out first, I want to experiment with more outbound direct sales for Process Kit.
Because it's like we are hitting a little bit of a tipping point on word of mouth. Every once in a while in the past, we'll get a mention on Twitter. But the past few weeks has been like, there's a lot of constant talk about our product, and in a good way. And among like big time advertisers and merchants and people, oh, I'm interested. What are your results? People posting screenshots. You know, I just got off the phone with someone this morning that I was like, yeah, I keep hearing about you guys. Every conversation when I'm in these groups, like it just keeps coming up. So I feel like it's like there that right now would be effective to be like, hi, that's us. The thing you keep hearing about, do you want to talk? You know, but to just tip them over instead of just relying on them saying, oh, maybe I should contact them. Yeah, it feels like it's so close. Like we don't have to take
somebody on the team to go every tweet, go hunt down their website, find out the person, get in contact. Like
there's something there that's not like this big giant leap of like, let's start up a whole new machine. No, it's like, I'm gonna figure it out. I like that kind of puzzle. Lately, when I talk to my wife, the way I describe it is like, I get a puzzle. And then I solve it just good enough that I like survive the task and I can move on to the next one. And
that's what building a business is. It's one problem after another. That's all it is. How do you solve for that?
I think this is related to the personal finance thing. Like, I just let me solve the puzzles. I don't want to deal with any of this stuff. Yeah. In many ways, that's almost like what investors or like VC feels like. Where it's like, ignore everything else and just focus on fixing this puzzle. And if you get it, we all win.
You know what it is? The hardest thing. I mean, I just came from two big Snow Tiny Comps, and the thing that I'm trying to get from those when I talk to my friends there is like, building and growing a business, it's literally solving one problem after another. We have this gap or this problem or this issue. We have to solve for that so that we can move on to the next issue. But the hard thing is figuring out which problems to solve and in which order. Especially for me at this early stage in Process Kit, like it's not just about like how to solve these problems. We've got plenty of options on the table. We could evaluate each one. It's, am I solving the right problem? You know, is it a higher cost to not look at that other problem first or second? You know.
Yes. And the order matters.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to kind of coach my leadership team on this because I want to share more with them. I don't want to just keep the stuff in. And historically, I've kept too much just like myself and like one or two other people. And now we got a leadership team. Like, hey, let's be leaders. You guys need to know all the stressful stuff. And in many ways, it feels like I'm showing them the next like five or six puzzles and then saying, now that you know those exist, put those out of your mind and we're going to work on this puzzle that's right in front of us on the desk first. And I feel like they're getting used to that. They're like, they're thickening their skin on like, that is a lot of stress if I look at all of them at once, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to look at this thing first. I'm going to worry about that with the confidence that when I get there, I'll solve that too.
Yeah. How are you doing on time?
I got another few minutes.
So I've got the Indian developer to talk about, or I could talk about some positioning and research stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my part, the Copenhagen thing, was just me gloating about how phenomenal of an experience it was. So no one really needs to hear that much. How about you? How are things going on the development side?
Okay, so I'm super psyched about this because I feel like it's like a triumph after just so many bad experiences with it. Like,
okay, so is this someone totally new?
Totally new. I talked on the podcast how I tried hiring one guy for like a month. That didn't work out. Then about a month or so ago, I went to Upwork and I hired a solo Indian guy. And that 1 week trial did not work out at all. Couldn't do the most basic task, or he half did it, couldn't communicate. Then I went to Big Snow. My friend Aaron Casavar, who you may know, he recommended his Indian agency, who completely has built his product. I started working with them on like a part-time basis. They're like a 100-person agency in India, but like they've got 20 people who do Rails. And I guess they hooked me up with like their lead Rails tech guy. And so he's basically the guy that I deal with day to day. Currently, I started with them just 20 hours a week, and it's a pretty low hourly rate. So it's like, it doesn't cost a whole lot. First of all, I'm just completely thrilled with A, the fact that they perfectly knocked out the issues that I gave them, and then some. Like they would fix an issue, and then they're like, oh, by the way, we also noticed this bug and that bug that's related to this. Those were known bugs that I had known about, but I didn't want them to find, and then they found them. And literally every single day at 8 a.m. my time, I'm getting a report on this is exactly what we did. Look, these are the files that we changed. They're writing these long GitHub issue comments in like perfect English. Like everything is just awesome. I'm reviewing their code, and I could see what they've been doing. Like Stimulus.js is something that I'm using throughout the app, and it's a pretty new JavaScript framework. It's very simple, but not a lot of developers are familiar with it. And from day one, they implemented things using like the Stimulus way, you know. So it's just like really well done stuff. What I like about having them working with me now is that I'm continuing to push the roadmap myself. So I'm building the big features that like I know the next three features that people keep asking for. I need to build those and get them out, and I can do that pretty fast now. And I'll write tests for them and everything. But there's like these like smaller periphery issues that just keep nagging, and people kind of ask for them, but they're small or they're a little bit tricky for me to do. So like last week while I was at Big Snow, they added the ability to embed videos in Process Kit, which was big for a lot of customers. But then the other thing that I'm really excited about is this workflow of me shipping the big feature and then them coming back behind me and refactoring it, speeding it up, and making all these improvements. And so, you know, there's a couple of like really key views in the app, like the everyday views that you come back to day after day with your team, that are really slow. And because I built them in not the most efficient way, too many database calls, this and that. Like a couple days ago, they took 3 days and they went, and I was like, this is the one, like the task list view is too slow. Like I see it, my customers see it. Just go through and make a bunch of suggestions on how you can improve it. They made a bunch of suggestions. I was like, great, go. And then like 2 days later, they went through, refactored it. I mean, it's a noticeable speed improvement, you know, and now it's pushed live to the app. And it's like within 3 days, you know.
They're like an assisting team. Like they're not pushing forward, but they're handling all the things that allow you to focus on continuing making progress.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I'm not tasking them with like, look, go design and build and figure out how to implement this big feature.
Yeah, that's kind of on you right now.
It's still on me, and I like doing that. Like I like designing the UI and also figuring out how it fits in with the whole application, because I mean, I built the whole thing at this point. So it's nice because I can give them very, very specific technical tasks. Like right now, I'm about to ship clients. So we've had processes and projects, and now you can have clients in Process Kit, and so that you could associate multiple projects with clients and things like that. I'm like 90% of the way done with building that, and we've got like custom client attributes that play into this, makes it a little bit complex. I built like 90% of that. I'm about to get on a plane tomorrow for vacation, and there's like one or two aspects of this feature that I did sort of hit a little bit of a wall. And in the past, I would have probably spent 2 or 3 full days either trying to Google it or going on Code Mentor and getting somebody to coach me through it or this or that. And now I can be like, look, this feature is basically done. I'm on this part of it. Here's the technical rundown on it. I just need you to figure out how to do this one thing and complete that for me. And they're going to do that like next week while I'm in South America, you know.
Right. So where you built something that isn't that strong of a foundation underneath it, I think you just kind of fill it all in.
Yeah. And the other nice thing is that I have full test coverage on everything. So when they go through and clean up, like when they sped up that view that I was talking about, like they can go do that work and all they need to do is run the test suite. And as long as they continue to pass, then we're good.
Amazing.
It's awesome. It just feels all really right, man. Like, I just feel like it's way more efficient going forward, and I'll be able to move so much faster now, like having that like assistant.
Very nice. Well, I feel like you've been looking for the right situation. Hopefully this is going to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, man. Well, I would love to dig in, but it is Valentine's Day and I'm taking my wife out to lunch. Podcast be damned.
Good man.
Good stuff, man.
All right.
Take it easy. Thanks for the therapy. I appreciate it. send me an invoice. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. Later, y'all.
Later.